Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard, and it is Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. Happy belated St. Patrick's Day to all of the Roz, Connor Ronan, and all other Irish people or Irish Americans who are celebrating. Kevin Cabral opened his 2024 account to help the Rapids get a result in Seattle, and nobody had that on their bingo cards. Rapids 2 picked up right where they left off in their season opener, as they'll be getting 7 reinforcements for their game against Azteca in the Cup tomorrow at time of recording. And Jordy Mihailovic has a better performance, but also has some splaining to do. I'm joined now by a man who bewared the Ides of March, which are now gone, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Good stuff, Matt. Well done. Hope everything is enjoyable. I went out with the kids on Sunday night, searching for food, forgetting that it had been St. Patrick's Day, and like half, three quarters of the restaurants in the city were closed because Pittsburgh is a Catholic town, baby. And also, for those who are not strictly Catholic, most people, I think, were exceedingly hungover by Sunday night. So there was like, we went to a bar, and the guy goes, a bar and grill. And he said, this guy at the front said, actually, we went to two places. We went to a bar that had food. And I look at the guy and he has to call on his like walkie talkie to see if they admit kids. And he says, no, I'm sorry. You know, we're 21 and over right now. It was after 8 o'clock. And I turn to my kids and I go, Iggy, Etta, you've been thrown out of your first bar. Congratulations. And then from there we went to a bar with darts and duck pin bowling. We were right down by the stadium. We went down to like the downtown, the produce market has been turned into this cool hip like food court kind of place. Everything was closed. So then we went across the bridge to where the football and baseball stadiums are, where there's of course a row of bars and grills and bar grills and grill bars. And one place had duck pin bowling, and tacos and nachos, and that's what we got. And the kids were chilling and having a good time on kind of like the night after St. Patrick's Day kind of event. So it was good times all around, but we have bewarned the Ides of March by being hungry. Tomorrow is a fast day for the Jewish people. It is the Jews and the Irish have a thing in common, which is our major drinking holidays roughly coincide almost every year. This year, it's the holiday of Purim, which is the festival that gives the whole kind of idea in Judaism that our people often talk about. They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. So Purim is the holiday of, they tried to kill us, we survived, let's drink. It's about a Purim, a Persian near genocide that turns into a farce and merriment and silliness, and we go drinking. And here I am with my Stranahan's whiskey in hand, starting things off early. Unfortunately, as a working rabbi, I almost never get to drink anymore on Purim. And if I do, I get to drink a little because I'm responsible for 12 programs and, you know, serious religious whatnots and so on and so forth. So anyways, Saturday night is Purim in the Western world, folks. You know, tell a Jewish person you said, be joyous on your holiday.
Be joyous on your holiday, Rabbi. Stranahan's, if you want to become a new sponsor of the podcast, we would love to get some of your sweet nectar of the gods.
We'll do an ad read twice a podcast for the next 52 weeks for two bottles of whiskey. We are a cheap date.
Yes, literally one for me and one for Mark, and I think that's right. I think we'd be pretty solid. Okay, Mark, we've got a banter topic request. I have mentioned this about, I'd say once a quarter, at least twice in a calendar year, that our paid highliners can request a more nuanced or like a not just, hey, let's quickly rapid fire answer and ask HTHL, but if you want us to commit a banter topic or an entire episode of the podcast or an article on the Substack to a particular topic that is something open to people who have given us money. And so, Mark, we have a request here. I did not ask this individual if I could say their name, so I will not unintentionally and unknowingly dox them should they not want their identity to be revealed associated with this question. But Mark, this was in response to our 11 questions that would define the 2024 Colorado Rapids season, to which this individual reached out to me and asked why we weren't talking about which Rapids player was the biggest thirst trap. I responded by saying, I do not think a team being heavy, being a very thirsty trap in terms of the starting 11, or a team having, you know, Erling Haaland face was necessarily a determining factor in how good the squad was going to be. But Mark, this is a question and we're going to answer it now. I should point out that Rabbi and I are two white, cisgender, heterosexual, straight men. So we are not necessarily the best arbiters of physical attractiveness when it comes to an entirely, I'll say mostly male, I'm not going to assume any Rapids players' gender, but presumably majority cisgender male athletes. So Mark, would you like to take a first stab at this, or should I run down who I think the hotties in Burgundy are?
All right, so the top of the list is almost clearly and has consistently been Cole Bassett, who is a good-looking fellow by any step of the imagination. Now, this is one of the weirdest things for me to say out loud, considering I was at Cole Bassett's professional signing with his mom and his dad, and I think his sister and his brother. Definitely has a brother. I'm not sure about a sister.
Sam Bassett. Maybe, yes,
I'm maybe conjuring the sister. But anyways,
yeah. Also, hi to all of the moms of Rapids players who listen to the podcast. I know there's at least three of them, so this is going to be awkward, and we apologize.
No, but my point is that is really awkward, which is to say this young man is very handsome, and I also met him at the age of like 16. So we've gotten into like the creepy weirdness of the thing. So he's the obvious one, but I still think he's a good looking guy. My number two, and I don't think this is a stretch at all, I don't think it's even really arguable, Zach Steffen, our new goalkeeper. I think he is an absolutely handsome man. And kind of like, you know, Cole Bassett is kind of like, I mean, Cole Bassett is very clearly like Abercrombie and Fitch, catalog model good looking. Zach Steffen is like ESPN cover model, or like, you know, WWE side hustle job kind of good looking, because he's a big, broad shouldered dude. So that's the next one. And I think the third one down for me is Andreas Maxo. Maxo is a very is very classically Nordic. You know, he looks like if they put him in the gym for a while long enough, he could play Thor in another Marvel movie. I mean, he's just that kind of good looking guy. So those are my three. Matt, I'm going to turn it over to you. Is there somebody else that you think might be up there on the list?
I struggle, Mark, to understand the different subcategories of like what certain women are looking for, because, you know, I mean, you could, not that I go down these rabbit holes a whole lot, but at least as someone who's now back on the dating apps, like, you know, there's a lot of data out there that, you know, like the difference between what a guy gets on Tinder being 5'11" being 6 feet is a significant one. So obviously there's a significant height disparity that we have amongst the Rapids roster. So I do have a subcategory here for my short kings, Mark, or at least the fellow men who are below the average height based on the U.S. Census data that we do have. But I think if you're taking the consensus, we do have to go with Zach Steffen. I would say, Mark, that the Rapids are definitely heavy. There's a lot of guys who have really good, there's a lot of guys who I think are attractive, but who don't have a lot of facial hair. And so for the women who really care about that, being in Colorado, being hipstery, winter is certainly a variable. If you were to make a, if I were to do a knock to the face, you know, gym maxing of Cole Bassett or Andreas Maxu, the fact that they do not have very good facial hair. And I should say, we are very much a pro facial hair podcast here, Mark. You know, I've got the stubble and I've got the beard. You've rocked various things that you have. I would say, let's see, we recorded, I've had the mustache, I've been growing out the mustache since July 2019, because it was Stephen and Haley's wedding in that summer in at Baylor, Texas, that I missed. So the podcast existed for a significant period, but I would say from that point on previously, from that point on since then, Mark, I would say we're probably in single digits in terms of number of episodes that have been recorded, in which most of us are clean shaven. So if you want a guy who can rock the beard but has a good stubble game and has done a very good job of manicuring it and curtailing it, I think Zach Steffen's certainly that. You mentioned Steffen being the ESPN model type, Mark. I believe, I feel pretty confident in saying the only player associated, the only person associated with the Colorado Rapids who's ever been on the ESPN body edition has been Tim Howard. And so if I were to nominate a Rapids player who would be on that right now, I'd have to think that it would be Zach Steffen. So Zach Steffen's up there. I agree with you. Cole Bassett and Andreas Maxu are on there. If we're going on the shorter end of the spectrum, Mark, or guys who have a good style game, if we think about the, you know, the, what, you know, guys getting photographed, showing up to a game on the walk from the car into the locker room, like what are they wearing in terms of that game day fit? Rabbi, I know you've made a joke on Backpass that you do not care about this. I'm someone who's here for that. So looking at guys who have that, in addition to on the other end of the spectrum, a height standpoint, I have to go with Keegan Rosenberry and with Jonathan Lewis. If there's a short king thirst trap that you have on the team, I think it's absolutely Jonathan Lewis. From a muscle standpoint, doesn't have a lot of tattoos from what I've seen. I haven't seen Johnny shirtless in a few years probably, but then, you know, he's got the, you know, he's got the neck scruff, if you care about that. He shaved that off as well. You know, he's done a few different things with the hair as well. You know, and I have to think that the lady's like a, certainly a flair player, a guy who's got a little bit more personality, the creative type, Mark. Maybe to the female members, female Highliners, please write in, what is the soccer equivalent of chicks dig the long ball? You know, are you going for a center back? We tend to like D-mids on here. Do you want a goal scorer? I don't have a sense of what position on the soccer pitch, Mark, is the typical thirst trap, other than just presuming it's the number 10, but maybe I'm wrong on that. So Lewis is on there. And if you're looking at Keegan Rosenberry, just his style of just being a very chic male as well, in terms of the drip on the pitch, off the trip as well, what he's done from his own hairstyle, how he's helped out with the glow up of other teammates having previously cut their hair as well. I have to put Keegan Rosenberry on there as well. If I'm maybe missing out on some other guy there, Mark, if we're going for, again, somebody with who's a little bit more leaning into the facial hair and more of the brawny, lumberjacky type, I'd throw in Micah Edwards. But I think that's our list. Let us know what you think, listeners. Do you agree, disagree? Go ahead, Rabbi.
I got one more, which is, I think Darren Yappe is kind of up there. He's looking good. I was kind of flipping through pictures that John Babiak had sent us from training, and I was like, all right, Darren Yappe is a handsome fellow, and he gets honorable mention on my list.
And I would have to say, Mark, there's a lot of guys that are out there in like the Pete Davidson weird look, or you have with like rappers where like their haircut is crazy and then their tattoos are crazy as well. I realize I'm about to maybe make a weird comparison here, but Rafael Navajo has done crazy stuff with his hair. He's got neck tattoos as well. I know there is a subset of the population that is really in and attracted to that as well. And while neck tattoos normally would be a red flag for me, just generally as a human being, I think they're absolutely a green flag from a soccer player standpoint, or at the very least, like, you know, I want 2 to 3 seriously tatted up guys in my starting 11, and I'd want at least one neck tattoo on the team as well. And if there's any position I'd want on the neck tattoo, it'd probably be an attacking player. So having that be your DP, number 9, you know, flamboyant, you know, playful style that you get from your Brazilian number 9 up top, certainly I think Rafael Navajo's on there. Okay, hopefully this isn't too cringe, it doesn't get us canceled, Mark, and the various Rapids player
it
family
shows,
members.
It shows that we're comfortable with our sexuality, that we can talk about good-looking men and not feel like it makes us feel like any less than what we are. Like, it's totally fine to acknowledge that another member of our gender is a good-looking fellow without it having... And even if it did have implications on, you know, our sexual identity, who cares, man? It's 2024. Move on. I'm a happily married man. What are we worrying about here? Let's go back to the soccer, though.
Yes, absolutely. We'll move on here, Mark. So, listeners, this past Saturday at the Clink in the afternoon, the Colorado Rapids played Seattle Sounders to a 1-1 draw. Rory Diaz scoring in the 11th minute on a penalty off of a penalty that he drew with a... I've heard this word a few times, Mark, and I can't remember what it is. It's not a pananka, because it's like it's with the outside of the foot, but it's not intended to be a shot. There is some Spanish or European word for that I can't remember what it is now, that I heard on a podcast recently. But so he does that. Keegan Rosenberry, who is marking him, is not anticipating that. His hand is in a otherwise understandable position, but obviously out from his body. Hits his hand. Pretty obvious handball call for Scabby the ref to make there. Rory Diaz slots it home. I thought Colorado was the better team from that point on, Mark, on the whole of the match. So I'll say the final, 79 minutes, but certainly they got better in the second half. Omer Fernandez had a chance in transition that was off a deflected cross from Jackson Reagan that goes off the post. Darren Yappe had a shot that was blocked by Nuhu Tolo that I think had the highest XG from the run of play for the Rapids. Rafael Navajo did a really good job pressing, and that created an opportunity as well. But the Rapids finally get on the board in the 88th minute when Kevin Cabral has a tap-in at the near post off of a free kick that Jordy Mihailovic set off the post. And prior to that, Jordy Mihailovic had a penalty that was won by Rafael Navajo, and Jordy insisted that he took it, and it was a really poor take, and Andrew Thomas was able to make the save. But Mark, I would argue a performance that, you know, from... And we'll say from 57 minutes in, when Joshua Tencio gets the second yellow card, that the Rapids had been the better team, or at the very least had played Seattle evenly. And certainly they were the protagonists for the final 33 minutes of the game. For me, this is a game that the Rapids should have won based on what they did, both when it was 11-11 and when Seattle was reduced to 10 men, especially given that both teams had a penalty that was deserved. And Seattle converted on theirs, and Colorado did not. But Rabbi, I will throw to you first. Let's start with your good things.
Well, so we went to the Clink, and we are historically bad at playing at Seattle. I guess it's not the Clink anymore. It's
Lumen Field.
Lumen,
but yes,
Field.
We still
very
call
good.
It the Clink. So it will forever be Dick's Sporting Goods Park, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, I'm a fan of actually recognizing the current paying sponsor if only because, yet like here in Pittsburgh, the throwball field is called, we used to call it Heinz Field, and now it's called Acrisure. And the idea that I should be mentally and like emotionally connected to some corporate sponsor Fortune 500 company over another corporate sponsor Fortune 500 company is ridiculous. So it's Acrisure to me, but whatever. Nobody really knows what Acrisure is. That's the problem there.
Yeah, I don't know what Exploria does, Mark, to be honest, now that I think about it. But Clink is a fun nickname, and we can...
It's a travel... Isn't it a travel, like, website where you could, like, buy tickets to resorts and stuff? I don't know. Anyways,
I have no
point.
Idea, and I don't care. Oscar Breja is not getting off to a good start with Orlando City. Orlando! But so...
Dignity Health Sports Park sounds like a funeral home. It doesn't... It never sounded like a medical...
Okay,
that's... All right, anyways.
In any case, the Clink is a fun nickname.
What do I
Mark.
Think?
We are going to call it the Clink. Moving
importantly,
on.
More importantly, what do I think? I thought the Rapids have went into a stadium they usually don't do very well in and did very well. I thought they played, like you said, Matt, I agree with you. The first 45, they kind of went nose to nose and went well. They came out in the second half and didn't look great until the red card. And then with the red card, they had trouble converting on a power play, and that was a little disappointing. But all in all, I will absolutely take this 1-1 draw. This is a good road point. The team played really well overall. There were some particularly solid performances. I think Moise Bombito had basically his fourth good game in a row. Ali Larraz switched the point of attack multiple times and was really good at kind of directing through balls, considering that he was going to be the man on the spot in the spotlight because Connor Ronan is out for a little while with a knee injury. So that was really interesting to see. It was interesting to see the lineup shaking up a little bit differently. Darren Yapi starting as a forward in this match, or at least as a wide mid, depending on how you look at the Rapids 4-2-3-1. Those are some of the kind of like highlights of the team. And I thought especially, and I might be influenced by the commentators who were really trying to, you know, Max Bretos and Dunseth, Brian Dunseth? I forget. Go ahead, Matt. You were going to say.
Brian Dunseth. And I should say, Mark, for yeah. They've been friends of the show. Max Bretos has shouted us out. They've both been very kind. Dunny has been nothing but polite to me in my press interactions.
He's a great guy.
With him over the course of the last couple of years. So for a commentating crew that are based in RSL, you know, Dunny used to be the color commentator for RSL back when they were, you know, had their own broadcast as well. And then Max Bretos was with LAFC for, I think, their entire start up until the Apple TV one as well. So for two Western Conference, commentators who are so focused on their individual team, who did not have a reason to be nice to the Rapids, they've been well informed. They're one of my favorite. They're at minimum top five. They could be top three for me in terms of the commentating duos that we've seen for Apple TV in what, a year and a month.
Yeah. What I was going to say was they talked up Cole Bassett a lot during this game. And I thought mostly that the hype lived up to it, which was that Bassett had one of his better games. I thought he played really well. The question that I think is starting to emerge, the narrative is starting to emerge. And I think the really interesting narrative that came out of this game on that level is I thought going into the season, based on his USMNT pedigree and his experience a couple seasons ago as being one of the kind of league leaders in goals and assists together, that Jordi Mihailovic was going to be the centerpiece of this team, also because the team gave him the number 10. I'm starting to think that Cole Bassett is the kind of like alpha male on this team, that he is the center and the straw that stirs the drink. And Mihailovic is kind of, a supporting player. And that is a really interesting development for me. So I thought, you know, all of those things are notable. Matt, you're a good thing.
I'll pick up where you left off, Mark. The two best players on the Rapids through four games this season, for me, unquestionably, are Cole Bassett and are Moise Bombito. I thought Moise was cool, calm, and collected in the moments that he needed to be. And while there's been moments where they've looked disorganized or where it looks like a good opportunity is going to be created by the opposition, their structure, it's very similar like Sean Dyche with Burnley, Mark, where it was almost like they'd funnel you into an area and then intentionally funnel you to their best player. I guess I'm comparing Moise to Tarkowski off the top of my head in this one, or I can't remember the name of the center back that he had at Burnley. Tarkowski's at Everton, if I'm not mistaken now. But so where it's the result of the play is what appears to be a 1v1 situation where Moise Bombito has to make a play, but it is relatively routine, and it is something that he's doing almost with like a calm, like there's no concern about the situation. It's being dealt with relatively easily, just like some of the big saves that normally you would think would be acrobatic from Zach Steffen that we would be holding our breath about this time last year if it was, you know, if it was William Yarbrough or if it was Marko Ilicic that just Steffen makes and you assume that he's going to make the save. So another really good performance from Moise Bombito. He had a couple of really good plays against Raul Ruiz Diaz. He's getting called up for Canada. He's going to miss the game against Houston this weekend. I think absolutely Moise Bombito has an opportunity to be called up more and get serious minutes for Canada at Copa America should they qualify. They have to play in the playoff game against Trinidad and Tobago, and if they win that, then they're one of the playoff play-in teams for Copa America. But he's one of the best young center backs that the Rapids have, Mark, and that has limited the opportunities right now and possibly long-term, whether or not they'll be at the club, for a Mike Edwards and for a Nate Jones. And if all of that is just leading to Moise Bombito being a fantastic young center back for the Rapids, getting it a serious opportunity to be the starting center back for Canada come 2026, and eventually him to be sold off to France or Europe, wherever, for many millions of dollars, I am absolutely here for it. You mentioned Cole Bassett, Mark. The biggest question that we had going into this game, with the absence of Connor Ronan, who has that knee injury that we haven't seriously talked about a whole lot, Mark, maybe we'll touch on that in a bit, and then with Jasper Loftussen being questionable with a hamstring injury late in training last week, was what the Rapids were going to do in midfield and whether or not this is going to be a debut for Lamine Diak, or were we going to see some other shift, or were we going to see a shape shift? Or let's give credit to Wanners over at Box State Footy calling that moving Cole Bassett back and then having Omir Fernandez on in a wide role going forward and then having Jordy back at the 10. And I thought it worked really solidly. Cole and Ollie absolutely cooked. There's one bad thing that I'll get to when we get to bad things that I think will be a problem for that midfield going forward, because I still don't think it has a whole lot of bite. But if you want mobility, if you want pressing, and fundamentally if you want quality on the ball going forward and sauce, Ollie LaRoz and Cole Bassett reuniting from what that U17, U20 Rapids Academy team is absolutely the tandem that you would want in that situation. Other good thing that I'll say, Mark, is we'll get to him when we get to bad thing, but remove the penalty miss, and this was Georgie Mihailovic's best performance with the with the Rapids so far. I thought pressing was a lot better. I thought he did a lot better job on the ball when he got it, and he looked more comfortable and in a more natural position. It flowed easier and looked less difficult and more natural for him playing in mostly a central role and then Omir being out in a wide role rather than previously where it's been Georgie on the left and then being a little bit mobile, but then Cole also being in a central position. And that also did not limit Cole's ability to then dribble forward and be a part of the attack as a late runner and mostly from a central position. So Cole is more of an 8-6 as opposed to an 8-10, to use Robin Fraser and Chris Little's old terminology. That certainly suits him just as well. So if that's a net positive to where it's, Georgie's not the best player that the Rapids have at that position, but if they're better in the aggregate with Cole Bassett playing at his second best position and Georgie playing at his best position, then the Rapids are better off for it. Rabbi, I will throw to you for bad thing.
The bad thing. There weren't a ton of bad things. I mean, honestly, the Rapids looked a little bit... They struggled with possession from minute 17 through minute 45, and that's where the goal came from Seattle. And I think at times they struggled in possession with the ball at that point, and so I think that overall was kind of a challenge. There were a couple players who I think were a little bit disappointing. you know, Mihailovic missing the penalty would be a good example of that. I think Omir Fernandez had a acceptable but not exceptional outing for the Rapids. Keegan Rosenberry was kind of okay, but more or less missing. But yeah, that there weren't a whole lot of obvious big drops here. I think the other positive that I'll say is that the setup that Chris Armas went into was the right setup, which is that the team had a strong mid block that made it hard to play through for the Sounders. And I think that there was a lot of counter pressing and kind of pressure on the ball at high positions, which rattled Seattle. That's a new development also. So I know that you said bad thing, but I was throwing in one more good thing. Matt, any bad things for you?
I'm tempted to diminish the significance of this result, regardless of the circumstances and the opponent and where the game was played. We've not seen, Mark, in what, the decade now, this summer, that Brian Smetzer has been the head coach of the Seattle Sounders, get personnel decisions wrong or get tactics wrong. And so as soon as, with all the injury concerns that there were around Seattle, as soon as I saw Pedro De La Torre wasn't available, and then João Pedro was on the bench, and then I think also Yeimar Gomez Andrade was on the bench as well. I stand corrected. Neither of them were on the bench. I'm looking at the bench now. They were physically on the bench. They were not on the roster, so they're with the team, but they're hurt. Albert Rusnak was the one who was on the benchmark. And you come out in a 4-4-2 with Atencio and Obed Vargas as your center midfielders, and you've got Raul Ruiz Diaz, who's not 90 minutes fit at this point in the season, and Jordan Morris up top. I think those two are just a little bit too, they're too redundant, they're too similar, and they get in the way, and that made things just way too easy for the, if we're talking about the box in front of Zach Steffen, so Larraz and Cole Bassett at the front of it, and on the back, Andreas Maxu and Moise Bombito. I just thought that there wasn't a whole lot of resistance. This was, for me, easily the worst, in the time I've been covering the club, this is the worst performance that I've seen from a Seattle home team against the Colorado Rapids. I feel very confident in saying that, even with the, if we're just saying through the first 57 minutes, so with the teams playing at even strength, that had been the worst performance that Seattle had ever performed against the Rapids since 2016 for me. But I do not understand what Brian Smetzer was thinking, having the two forwards up top who are a little bit redundant, when you could have moved Jordan Morris to a wide role and then move Christian Roldan in the middle to just have a little bit more creativity, because you had a structure defensively that made it difficult for the Rapids to go up the middle with Vargas and with Atencio, but you had nothing going for it. And so where I'm a little concerned that maybe there's a false positive that we've seen in terms of what Ollie and Cole were able to do in the midfield, they did that with almost no pressure on them. And when there was pressure on them, it was usually physicality, usually somebody taking out Ollie and the Rapids winning a foul or that second yellow card that you got to Atencio as well. And so there's some pros and cons behind that, because Ollie's a little banged up right now. He had the little, not a cast, but maybe a brace mark. I don't know if you saw that on his wrist that he hurt in the opening minutes against RSL. And so maybe there's some teams that are thinking, you know, oh, Ollie's a little bit smaller, he's younger. I mean, I've seen him, you know, up close. I've interacted with him at training, you know, a few times this year. Like, he looks better from a fitness standpoint. I don't know that he's bulked up in the ways that Cole looks a little bit more filled out from an upper body standpoint. Darren Yapi looks miles better from a fitness and a gym standpoint compared to where he was 2-3 seasons ago. And so I'm wondering if opponents are thinking that of, oh, if we get physical on Ollie, he'll kind of shrink into games. And he didn't shrink into this game. He just happened to draw the second yellow card that got, you know, a Sounders player sent off. But I have to imagine, when opposing coaching staffs are looking at scouting this and thinking what to do, the one thing that you cannot do, if that's the double pivot that the Rapids have going forward, is just give them time and space on the ball, because that just made it so much easier for the Rapids to play out in ways that I don't think Portland did, in ways that certainly RSL did not at times. And I mean, Nashville let it happen, but they also put, you know, 10 and a half men behind the ball, so eventually there was some resistance that the Rapids had to go up with in that game. So I'd be thinking, Mark, if there was that midfield and what their strength is and what their weaknesses are, is perfectly set up for like a Diego Rubio in a central midfielder role to be a pressing player to just make their lives more difficult in terms of playing out, have you feel them physically and just not give them any time and space and be on them when you are in possession. And the Sounders midfield did absolutely none of that. And the fact that we do not get a Sounders substitution until the 60th minute after the red card just shows to me where I think this result wasn't unearned, because both the yellows on Atencio were fair. Both of the penalties were fair. I think it was deserved that Andrew Thomas was able to stop Georgie's penalty. But I just thought that Seattle made it way too easy on the Rapids. Again, to say nothing of all of the absences and the injuries that they have. And we can't count on that. Just like how with Portland and with the Nashville games with injuries to key players in those positions, we can't count on that going forward. And so that'll lead me into my big thing, but I want to highlight that. I know, Mark, I said that overall this was Georgie's best performance from the run of play, but, you know, he misses that penalty. And this was off of him and Hoffa having a conversation, and then it being decided that Georgie was going to take this penalty, given that Navajo had drawn a penalty, taken it, and then converted it last week. Or excuse me, he didn't draw the penalty against RSL, but he took it and he made it. And then he drew that penalty that then Georgie missed. You know, Mihailovic comes in. He's wearing the number 10. He's the most expensive player in terms of a transfer fee in club history, debating on whether or not he'll be the highest paid player from a salary standpoint. You are paid to be the Rapids equivalent of Carlos Vela, Nico Lodero, Cucho Hernandez. And in those moments, you have to show up. And he didn't. And that has me concerned, Mark, because that could have been another goal for Navajo, which would not have been insignificant. And we've seen the body language from Cole Bassett in the past when the Rapids have drawn a penalty and there's been a conversation and Cole doesn't get to take it, his disposition be upset with that situation. And I've seen him, he was working on penalties with Kai Kamara in 2019. And that's something that he's tried to get better on, that he thinks that he could be good at as well. And so that's the thing where I wonder, Mark, or where I have doubts about this team's ceiling, of when we get to a playoff game and you are playing the Vancouver Whitecaps and Georgie's going to get one really good play to make a difference in the game, and Ryan Gauld is going to get that same opportunity. I have no doubt in my mind that Ryan Gauld will punish the Colorado Rapids in that moment, and I increasingly still have doubts about the top-end talent and the difference-making players in the final third that the Rapids have, given that Navajo has two goals, none from the run of play. It's a penalty and a set piece last year against Dallas, and Georgie missed that penalty. And while it was great to see Kevin Cabral score, Mark, I think it's still worth pointing out that he's still probably a bust, and he's probably not going to start on Saturday. And even if he does, he's a known quantity at this point, that he's probably not worth the salary and the transfer fee that the Rapids have given up in order to get him. And Kevin Cabral has what? I think that's four goals now, and one of them's that deflection off the Andrew Gutman screamer in Leagues Cup, and the rest of them are effectively tap-ins where somebody else did all the work. Diego Rubio dribbled around and created an open goal for him against LA Galaxy. Michael Barrios did a similar situation at Austin last year, and, you know, credit to Cabral for being opportunistic and getting in that situation to have the tap-in, but Georgie puts that ball 1 inch to the left, and it probably goes in on its own off of the post and then into the far side netting, and it's Georgie's goal, not Kevin's goal. Mark, big things.
I just wanted to add that Navajo and Yapi not scoring again is something that I chatted with folks on Reddit that, like, people were, like, up in arms. Someone asked the question on Reddit, how many games is the MLS record for a forward at playing and not scoring? And Yapi's at 35. I looked up some statistics that the Rapids that MLS has. There aren't really a lot of well-registered. Do you know who is the all-time leader in Major League Soccer for minutes played without scoring a goal? And he just retired for outfield players. This is kind of stunning.
And he just so it's somebody who retired this offseason, Mark.
Well, he's not officially retired, but he's basically unofficially retired.
He's
so, yeah.
Unofficially. So he's unattached.
I'll give you a hint. He came out of retirement, played one more year, and then is back in retirement.
He came out of retirement, played one more year, and then is back in retirement. Ugh. And he no goals in MLS play.
None. And he's only played his entire career in MLS.
And this isn't like a goalkeeper, right?
Nope.
No, it's outfield player. It's an outfield player.
The all-time leader in minutes played and games played without scoring a goal for a goalkeeper is, of course, the all-time minutes and goal and played, which is Nick Raimondo. Nick Raimondo, mm-hmm. 516 games played in Major League Soccer, zero goals. But anyways.
Came out of retirement. Matt Beisler? I'm joking.
Oh, that's a good shout. A good try. It is Ray Gattis.
I would not have gotten that.
21 as a fullback, right? It's a position where you get a couple looks, right? 21,000 minutes in Major League Soccer, no goals. Anyways, we're a long way away from that. Darren Yapi has only something like 1,600 minutes in Major League Soccer, spread over two seasons. It's going to be a while till he gets there. But the question was originally asked on Reddit, like, how many? What's the all-time leader for forwards for not scoring a goal? And the answer is, I don't know. And there's no easy way to look that up. But anyways, so problem. All right. Big thing for the Rapids is they went toe-to-toe with a team that is assumed to be and is historically one of the royalty of the Western Conference. And they came out on top, or not on top, but they came out really doing well. And I thought there were long stretches of this game where they looked like they were in command. And I'm not just talking about time when they were up a man because of the red card. Overwhelmingly, this was a solid performance. You know, a lot of people amongst the Rapids intelligentsia will say, oh, this was 2 points dropped. We should have won this one. And I will say there was a foul in the box that went uncalled. There was the missed PK. There were just a couple of this could have been. And then there were a couple of good shots that the Rapids took that they didn't finish, including a really nice chance from outside of the box by Sam Vines that would have just been awesome, a good screamer, but he put it right at the goalkeeper. But I don't think that's the way to read this one. I think this was a game in which the Rapids controlled the tempo. They dictated terms at times to Seattle away, and I think that's a moral victory, if not an actual victory. So I thought this was great for the Rapids. And as we've talked about last week, Matt, the first seven games of the season are all tough situations for Colorado, and they seem to be able to produce and produce results. They're doing a pretty solid job here. One win, two draws, one loss. Through four games, I will absolutely take it. Matt, what do you think?
No, all sensible things you just said there, Rabbi. I'm
a sensible guy.
I'm going to be a very much an engineer and a scientist here and say that the sample size is too small. I need a larger sample size in terms of understanding the implications of these performances and then the results that they've gotten. I don't think there's any question that even if let's remove the red card, so let's compare the three games prior and then 57 minutes playing Seattle 11-11. I don't think there's any question. Every single performance has been better. And this was the best 90-minute performance that we've seen from the Rapids so far this season. So it's been getting incrementally better. And there's individuals who we've criticized on this podcast, not just Georgi Mihailovic, who have gotten better through the four games as well. So where I'm saying I need more information is goes back to it's still only, four or five games. And you'll remember a period last year, Mark, where the Rapids got off to a bad start, and then they played mostly bad teams. They got that draw against Charlotte. I think they got a draw against Nashville. They completely outplayed St. Louis and got a 1-1 draw on that one. If it wasn't for Roman Berkey, that game could have been 3-4-0 in the first half, certainly. And then our thought was, then you go into that difficult period. The Rapids played both of the Ohio teams. Don Baggi came back, scored a goal against the Rapids, won the game 1-0. And they played a couple of other good teams. They had that red card the red card and the non-handball call at San Jose as well. And so our thought going into between those two periods was, okay, the Rapids are getting better results. Is that because they're playing bad teams, or are they figuring things out? And then they had that really tough schedule that started in early May, and you remember they went all that period without getting a win and only scoring so many goals. And then by the time we got to 4th of July, we were like, okay, yeah, the Rapids are crap. That was a false positive. I don't know what the answer is here. There's still, Chris Armas and everybody keep saying, that this is a work in progress and it's going to take time, and I understand that, and all of this is in the context of them having a really tough start to the season, but also a really tough start to the season that has been made easier by other teams having injuries. No Maxime Crépeau, no Evander for Portland Timbers, you get blown out by them. You play Nashville at home, no Hany Mukhtar, no Sam Sturridge, and you get a draw. You get a 1-1 draw in that game where your only goal is an own goal. You play Seattle Sounders, who are missing a bunch of players. I think Brian Smetser gets the tactics wrong. You get a penalty lifeline, up a man, and you don't end up winning that game. So I could see where, on a very narrow focus of just in that game, that Rapids fans understandably are saying that it was 2 points dropped, but you zoom out into the macro of what normally happens when the Rapids go to Seattle, and you zoom out in the macro in terms of the Rapids being a work in progress and saying that that is 2 points gained. Ask me in like 2 months how I should, in retrospect, feel about this performance, and I will have an answer for you. I think it is a little bit too early for us to judge on this. Last two things I'll say about this game, Mark. I understand that as soon as the red card happens and the Rapids are making attacking subs to try and win the game, that you do not give Lamine Diak his debut yet. But the fact that we still have not seen him, and, you know, Jasper Lofelson out, Connor Ronan out, that, you know, we still have not seen him. There's only so many more games that are left to happen, and we need to see him in MLS play in order to get an understanding of what he can and can't be, what he can and cannot become, in order to make a decision on what to do with the purchase option or whether or not Porik Smith is going to let that expire, and then try to renegotiate just like they did with Marco this past summer. And so that is a concern that increasingly I have as games go by and Rafael Navajo has not scored goals from the run of play, is still doing a lot of really good, ugly defensive work, is still trying to create chances for himself. He's not doing enough with the chances he's getting, and the team is still not being set up well to feed him the ball a little bit more. And so if we're going to have a guy who's going to try and create chances, fail, not actually score any goals from the run of play, but as a physical specimen, is going to try hard for the team, is not going to be selfish and call for the ball like how Georgie was calling for it. Navajo could have been just as selfish for that. Mark, we might as well be starting Darren Yapi at the number 9 position. At the very least, he's cheaper and he's younger, right? If we're not going to get any goals from the run of play out of our number 9, let's free up that DP slot and spend it on something else as far as I'm concerned. And so I have that concern about Hafa. And just not seeing Lamine, if this wasn't the game in which to get him in, and he does not get minutes against Houston, I have to wonder what's going on there. And if it's for the betterment of the team that he's not playing because you found something with Cole Bassett, or you think that Ollie's absolutely going to be good, or Jasper's hamstring is fine, or, you know, then, you know, Connor Ronan's knee injury, he comes back from that and just in time for Lamine Diak's injury to be... Lamine Diak's loan to expire and everything, like, send him back at this point. Like, keep him around for like another month just until Connor can get healthy so that you've got depth at that position. But if he can't get on the field in these situations, then he's not worth whatever the transfer fee is that the Rapids are going to have to pay to get him. You know, as I reported, the 2.7 number that was floated out by L'Equipe, that is what I believe Knott's paid to get him from Turkey, but is not necessarily on the purchase option that the Rapids have. That being said, Nantes is in a relegation scrap right now in France. I have a hard time believing from a financial standpoint, even if you count that transfer fee being paid for this fiscal year, but then Diak's money potentially counting for the 24-25 European season. I don't see how a club pays that amount of money for that player and then immediately loans him out with an option to buy that is not them making a net profit comparing those transfer fees. So, and if he's a $2.7 million midfielder, how was he not a starter on Saturday? And how is he not, if he's not a starter on this Saturday, I have to further question that. Last thing I'll say, Mark, and then we can move on. I agree with David Goss's comments in the Monday episode of Extra Time Radio that the press is doing a very good job of stymieing the opponent when they build out of the back and try to have possession. It is not yet creating opportunities for the Rapids going forward, and it is not clear to me that they are on the same page. It looks disjointed at times. They're not necessarily moving in unison, and in that, it is not being as effective. Greg Berhalter, one of the favorite quotes that he has, Mark, when he talks about his style of play with the U.S. men's national team, is that they want to be a possession team, and they want to use the ball to create chaos and to disorganize the opponent and then create opportunities. The press is not yet creating turnovers that then lead to high quality opportunities in transition for the Rapids. It happens maybe once or twice a game, and they normally don't finish that opportunity. The press is doing a great job of stymieing the opponent. It's making it difficult for them to get the ball into the final third in a good position for them to create chances. But fundamentally, like, you know, the day one of New York Red Bulls, of Red Bull soccer, Gegenpressing 101 is we press the opponent to create opportunities in transition to get high leverage moments. That is what we do, and we do it at a high energy in order to create that. That is us having to be fitter and more organized than the opponent, and us having to be more exhausted, but it's worth it in the end because of what that creates for us. And so far, we're not seeing it. And that was one of the pillars of what Chris Armas was hired to do. And four games in, I'm not seeing it. And it's not clear to me that that aspect of what they're doing tactically has gotten much better in the four games. Well, as I would say, many other things have gotten better since the away game at Portland. Mark, anything else, or shall we move on?
No, I think we've covered that game very thoroughly.
Mark, I'm currently wearing our new merch. I'm wearing the, is this the tricolor merch? Is this the
mesh? That's what I was going to
say. Yes, I'm wearing the new swag here, folks. The gym shirt, Matt, which I'll be going to run on the treadmill later when we are done recording this podcast. Rabbi, tell our listeners how they can support the podcast, because we've got a few people who paid money and were supposed to get a shirt, and they haven't told us to send them a shirt.
So I was going to ask you, Matt, so there are two colors to choose from. There's the black and there's the camo gray, and you are currently wearing the camo gray. I wanted to ask, like, what makes you like the camo gray? What are the features of the camo gray performance shirt that you particularly like?
I just like the multicolor look of it as well. And then, you know, if you combine that with how, like, the shirt's going to age in terms of, like, some discoloring or I get something on it, you know, black and white can be very difficult to keep clean and everything. The Rapids chose well in choosing to wear burgundy because you can spill ketchup from your hot dog at the tailgate outside. You can get sweat stains on it, and this doesn't necessarily show. So the tricolor, particularly for something I'm going to wear in the gym and is going to get, you know, be that ratty gym shirt, you know, that I'm going to be pumping iron in, you know, in the lab and everything. That's generally my go-to as opposed to black, which can get a little faded. Both of them look very, very nice. If I had to choose between the two, I prefer the tricolor.
Matt got both because he's running the podcast. He's the CEO. I'll also say this, that, you know, if you pick the camo gray, you can invade an Eastern European country and be completely, you know, indetectable while you do covert operations behind enemy lines. So that's the upside of the camo gray. But in camo gray or in black, we have two performance shirts available to all of our highliners. We have a whole bunch of highliners who have not registered for shirts. So if you put your money down and you have not filled out the form on the holdingthehighline.substack.com to get your shirt, please do so. We would love to mail those out. Every shirt is an opportunity. We also have a few left over in Mike We Trust shirts for those who are interested. And in a few weeks, if there are folks who there are still a whole bunch of leftover shirts from non-subscribers, we'll throw out a sheet. An opportunity for non-subscribers to sign up and just buy the shirt straight away, because we don't have a massive warehouse here at HTHL Media headquarters in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Our warehousing services are limited as such, and so we're not trying to hang on to shirts. But that being said, we might hang on to it a while. Anyways, the point is, most importantly, if you are a listener to this podcast and you really like the work that we do, one, go to our Facebook and become friends with us on Facebook. We have a great Facebook page. We're trying to build it up, and trying to get more follows and more likes there. Two, you should read our Substack and subscribe to it. It's free. There's some podcasty goodness coming from there. There's some writing goodness. It's my main platform for writing. You get back pass once every 2 weeks from me, where I do the breakdown and analysis statistically and analytically and formationally about what's going on with the Colorado Rapids in terms of their tactics and how they're attacking things. Matt does some kind of cool bonus interviewy kind of things there. And then every once in a while for our paid highliners, we drop additional interviews with players from the back archives, or the behind the scenes look at how we do interviews and so on and so forth. So, and then the last thing that we'll recommend in order to get that t-shirt that we were talking about before is that you become a paid Highliner. If you're a junkie for all things Colorado Rapids, if you like all the Holding the Highline stuff that we do, the writing, the podcasting, and you'd like to support us, please become a paid Highliner. $48 a year, $5 a month, $96 at the Founders Club level. You'll get one of our cool shirts in camo gray or in black. And additionally, you'll be supporting citizen soccer journalism, which everybody's got to love. Because, you know, if it weren't for citizens playing soccer and citizens podcasting soccer and journalizing soccer, there would be no U.S. Open Cup, which is really the kind of amateur, semi-pro, and professional roots, grassroots level of soccer that me and Matt like to support at the highest level. Back to you, Matt.
Listeners, this coming Thursday, March 21st, so today, if you're listening to us on Thursday, the Colorado Rapids 2 will be hosting a local amateur team, Azteca FC. This will be in the first round of the 2024 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. We covered previously the fact that the Rapids, amongst many other MLS teams, will be
shout out to the Colorado Premier League. Colorado Premier League represent. The champions of the Colorado Premier League are an ASUSA team that gets an automatic bid to the Colorado Region first round U.S. Open. Often it's Harpos. It's been Azteca. FC Denver's got a shout this year. It's Azteca. So props to Azteca for getting this far. Just getting into the U.S. Open Cup is a big deal. And for those of you who are true soccer amateur sickos, go check out some Colorado Professional League, Colorado Premier League soccer. It's a lot of fun. They play out mostly at the turf field in Broomfield. Highly recommended. At least they were back when I was living there. Back to you, Matt. Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, Azteca's been cooking recently, Mark. They've been the better team, very much so. So I'd say that they're certainly unseating FC Denver and Harpos in terms of getting into the Open Cup and being the dominant force in the Colorado Premier League. In any case, Rapids 2 are playing them. This will be at DSG, so not on the campus of the University of Denver. This will be tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time. This game is free to watch, no geo-locking, no paywall on ussoccer.com, so enjoy that super grainy stream as well. And Mark, we finally got some clarity as far as the roster rules were concerned for MLS Next Pro teams that were playing, that will be playing in the Open Cup, and then how the Rapids could use that to their advantage, given they've got a couple young players who are on the fringes of getting into the first team on the bench, but then could use some opportunities with Next Pro, in Next Pro or in now the Open Cup with the Rap Kids. So U.S. Soccer recently announced that there's a bunch of roster rules for the 2024 version of this. And so, Mark, Rapids first team players are allowed to be loaned to Rapids 2 for the tournament under a few conditions. So first team players have to be loaned to Rapids 2. They cannot be making a salary above the MLS first team maximum salary budget charge. So that eliminates DPs, TAM players, players who are bought down with GAM, and then also said designated players. And then I think there's some scenarios where some U22 players and some homegrowns can also make money that is above the max budget charge. So I feel pretty confident Cole Bassett is ineligible to represent R2 in the Open Cup this year.
The Rapids released this afternoon a list of players that are eligible. Do you want me to read that, Matt, or you want to go?
I was getting them.
Get there.
So then players can also not have played more than 15 minutes on average per MLS game with the first team through the MLS match day preceding the Open Cup match. So basically, listeners, you could say go to the wait for the next MLS game to happen for when the Rapids have an Open Cup match, go to the player in question, and if they are not averaging at least 15 minutes of first team play across the number of MLS games the Rapids have played, then they're also available. So this mostly eliminates starters and basically the first two guys off of the bench as well. And so in addition, no more than 7 players can be loaned from an MLS first team to a Next Pro team to be included in the 18-player game day roster for that team for each round of the Open Cup. So with all of those rules included, the Colorado Rapids first team has made the following first team players available for selection for Eric Boucher and Rapids 2 for tomorrow's game against Azteca: Sebastian Anderson, Adam Beaudry, Mike Edwards, Wayne Frederick II, Nate Jones, Kamani Stewart-Baines, and Jackson Travis. I think that's about it for in terms of who's available. Mark, I think it's a good list. It's the list that you'd want. It's pretty much homegrowns and then draft picks who normally in these circumstances, if the Rapids first team was in it, these are the guys that would be in the starting 11 for a Rapids first team playing against a lower division team if Chris Armas was rotating the squad. This is effectively, these would be typical guys that we would see, that we would have seen Robin Fraser roll out in the last 4 years playing against, you know, anybody other than MLS or USL championship quality players. Mark, what do we think of this list and the new rules? And then, of course, we're just assuming that Rapids 2 are going to beat Azteca tomorrow. Yeah?
I don't know. I actually don't know about that. These Colorado Premier League teams tend to do really well for 70 minutes and then fall apart. So the goal for Azteca is to have a lead and then hang on to it. There's just something about working a 9-to-5 job and then playing soccer as an amateur that means that your fitness is just not going to be 90 minutes at the level of professionals and academy players. But often these CPL guys have a lot of experience. They play a lot of soccer. They tend to be technically better. They tend to be tactically better. They tend to be more experienced. They tend to be physically better in terms of the ability to kind of stand up to tackles and knock dudes off the ball. So those are all things to note. And then if things go a little bit badly when it comes to like referee calls or kind of finishing and converting, you know, then Bob's your uncle. I mean, honestly, I think this is a tighter matchup than anyone will give it credit to. That being said, if you look at the results tonight from Open Cup, I think both of the, all three yesterday and today's MLS Pro, Next Pro teams won over the amateur teams that they were playing. So Matt's looking that up right now. I'm really excited to see which of the academy players the Rapids have released as likely possibilities, because it tells me who amongst the academy is considered kind of like high profile top level players. So Miguel Alvarado, Zachary Campagnolo. Campagnolo is a goalkeeper. Are some names that are familiar to me. Colton Swan is also a name that's familiar. But then there's a whole bunch of guys on here that I'm less familiar with that I'm excited made that roster. On the Rapids, two players who are not academy players, Robinson Aguirre is up there, as is Ricardo Pena and Marlon Vargas, guys who've been with the team. And I'm excited to see Kamani Stewart-Baines get some run tomorrow. Adam Beaudry is probably the default goalkeeper for this crowd. And Sebastian Anderson and Jackson Travis will probably be running it down on the wings. So as fullbacks. So this will be a pretty talented team overall, but also not one that has much experience practicing together. And not one that has been, you know, really together much. So by comparison, Azteca qualified way back last fall, you know, basically qualifying to get into the first round of the U.S. Open Cup proper takes place in October and November, which means that this is a team that, you know, was all together and then had a couple months off and then probably stayed in shape because they knew that they were going to compete at this high level. So, and they have, that's the other thing, Matt, is the R2 players are going to this game going, all right, we're starting off our season. The Azteca players are playing in the biggest match they've ever played in their entire lives, which is going to be live streamed and on television. I have watched enough US Open Cup first round to know that it is bonkers. It is, and I'm talking about in person. I've seen FC Denver. I watched Harpo's versus FC Denver a few years ago. These games are off the hook, nitro charged chaos. They are absolutely bazonkers and super fun. And the Colorado Premier League team will come out like a bat out of hell and they are so excited to be there. And the goal for your average CPL team in these matches is just to kind of dial it back so you don't either get a red card or run through a freaking brick wall in the first 10 minutes, because that's how amped up these guys are. They are so charged to play. And for R2, they're probably coming into this match thinking, what the hell is going on, man? They are going to be facing an absolutely rabid team that are maniacal and fanatically prepared to ram it down their throats and score four goals in the first 4 minutes. That's what being Open Cup first round for an amateur team feels like. And it is super exciting and so much fun. If R2 can endure the first 15 minutes and then they can endure coming out at the break, they'll probably win this one. If they can't, they're in trouble.
I think Rapids 2 wins this game, Mark. I do not think the scoreline is close. I do think that the run of play, I do think that the run of play and the scoreline will be close at halftime, and I do think it will be it'll be a late collapse, like you said earlier. I think by the time we hit the 70th minute at that point, then Rapids 2 should be able to handle, get their business taken care of. Just a quick fact check for you, Mark. Austin 2 and Timbers 2 have both lost in the Open Cup. Portland Timbers had a red card, and then they ended up losing to Farolito.
Farolito, which is a is an OG. El Farolito was a taco restaurant in San Francisco that had three locations or something like that, and one of them was like six blocks from my apartment. It wasn't even the best taco place in San Francisco. It wasn't even the best taco place on its own block, but they've always had a very good top-level team in the Northern California Amateur Soccer League, and they've been in the Open Cup a number of times. So props to El Farolito. By the way, El Farolito has an OG kind of very simple logo that I would kill for on a t-shirt, but they don't make merch. So anyways, back to you, Matt. Sorry.
Hold on. I'm looking up this crest here.
El Farolito is Spanish for the little pharaohs. That's what it means. And it's a taco place.
I see the taco place. I see an amazing scran burrito here that I would totally smash at 2 a.m. Okay, I see the crest now. Okay, yeah, that's got a lot. That's got some.
I know! It's like a 1958 soccer softball team. That's what it is. It's calligraphy with a bunch of stars. It's amazing. Anyway,
and if I'm reading this subheading that we have here correctly, Mark, they won the U.S. Open Cup in 1993. All right, go El Farolito.
Yeah, big fans. Big fans.
Okay, we're off topic here, Mark. And then Austin FC. We're always off topic. And then Austin FC lost in penalties to Foro. And then the other Next Pro teams that have finished their games at time of recording all got blowout victories. Red Bulls 2 beat Hudson Valley Hammers 5-1. Minnesota United FC 2 beat Chicago House 3-0. And then Chicago Fire beat Chicago City 6-0 as well. So we'll have to see what that looks like. I don't know that I have anything else to say significantly about this game, Mark. You know, again, I think Rapids 2 will ultimately end up winning it. I think the seven players who we listed from the first team should start in this game, and I think it will be a good exercise for them, and I look forward to seeing some of these players, including the draft picks that we haven't seen in person yet, as they haven't played for the first team yet, and Rapids 2 has not played a home game yet. But Mark, let's move on. This coming Saturday, the Colorado Rapids will be hosting in their second home game of the season. They'll be playing Houston Dynamo, who are off to a bit of a slow start in league play. They just got their first win in league play over the weekend, defeating Portland Timbers 1-0. There's a valid question of whether or not they've got a little bit of a CONCACAF Champions Cup hangover. They played in the round of 16 and they beat St. Louis, and then they lost to, who was it? I think it was Philadelphia Union. Let me look that up. Who did they lose to? They lost to Columbus, Mark. They lost to Columbus by a score of 2-1 on aggregate. And I guess this would have been the
quarterfinals. That's in CCC.
Yes, yeah. In CONCACAF Champions Cup. And then they've got some injuries as well, Mark. Hector Herrera, Ache, their talismanic DP midfielder from last season, has not seen the field of play yet today. He has had a knee injury. It has been Jan Gregus. Rapids fans will remember him from Minnesota United, and then I believe also San Jose Earthquakes. And he's been paired with Artur, former Columbus Crew midfielder. Steve Clark is at the back, and Mark, we've seen him at his best. He can be single-handedly the reason why his team has not given up a goal, and there are other times where MLS is drunk after dark and he forgets what his hands are. Griffin Dorsey is their right back, Evergreen Colorado native, and he is cooking with sauce. He scored goals. He is fun to watch. Coco Kadeskia is another very exciting central midfielder, really good on the ball player, Mark. He is unavailable for this game. He has been called up for, I believe he's with Panama for the Nations League, so he will be unavailable for selection for this game. The other really goal dangerous player that they have, Mark, who I really like, or who I think is, who I rate, is on the left, and that is Bossy. And they've got a bit of a rotating squad right now going up on front. So this is a team that I think certainly is being taken seriously off of what they did last season, finishing as high as they did, finally advancing in the playoffs, obviously, and then obviously beating Inter Miami in the Open Cup. And this is a team that has gotten off to a slow start in league play because of injuries that they had going back to preseason. Certainly, this team is not as good in the middle without Ache, and then also having to do double duty with Champions League, albeit playing MLS opposition, so a little bit less mileage in terms of going from Houston to St. Louis or Houston to Columbus, as opposed to, you know, having to go play on a cow pasture in Guatemala or having to go to you know, one of the Mexican teams at altitude and get shellacked 5-0 in a second leg. So we could see Brad Smith off the bench potentially. Daniel Stairs is one of their bench center backs, Mark. We both think that he's been underrated from his time in the league. And with Coco Kadeskia unavailable, we could possibly see Latif Blessing, who was just acquired in a trade this season, formerly of LAFC, New England Revolution, and I think Toronto FC as well. And he's done some good stuff against the Rapids, albeit mostly from a central position. So, and all of this is to say without, as well, Mark, that this was a team that was very much Jekyll and Hyde between what they did last season at home versus away. They were one of the best home teams in the Western Conference last season, and they were very much middling on the road. Mark, I think this is a game that the Rapids absolutely have to be targeting as getting 4 points, and getting 3 points. If they get 4 points with a win, that'd be absolutely fantastic. But Mark, if we see the roster and the lineups drop on Saturday, you know, early evening, and Hector Herrera is not with this team, this absolutely needs to be 3 points, and it needs to be a dominating performance. And if the Rapids are able to make this another improved performance and a bunch of individuals improve, as we've seen them do incrementally from every single game, this should be a comprehensive victory Saturday night at the Dick for the Burgundy Boys.
Yeah, Houston is one of my dark horse teams. I really like them, but they've really let me down so far this season. And I think, so Ben Olsen has created a team that is greater than the sum of its parts. Remember, Ben Olsen, a refugee from DC United, lifelong player for DC United, followed by being the coach for DC United. And then he got fired, you know, after last year's debacle, or 2 years ago debacle. They just didn't put it together. But this is a team that has a number of veteran MLS players. You have Artur, Daniel Stairs, Griffin Dorsey's becoming a veteran. Jan Gregus, Brad Smith, who's a left back who formerly of Seattle. Hector Herrera, as you mentioned, Latif Blessing. There's a lot of neat parts here, but the question of, like, how do they come together? Well, the answer used to be Coco Kadeskia, or would be in any other game, Coco Kadeskia, who is really the straw that stirs the drink. He's the exciting player who kind of shuttles and connects and forces people to play through him, and is really fantastic. Ibrahim Aliyu, Nigerian striker, who was starting to come into his own at the back end of last year, is a really nice piece. And I would think Aliyu, Bossy, who you mentioned, and Kadeskia make this team a very talented, very dangerous team. Without Kadeskia, I'm with you, Matt. I think the Rapids have the advantage, especially on the road. Houston is kind of missing some of the pieces that they need. Artur and Grey Goose are kind of beginning to move into their decline years as players. They're both effective holding midfielders, but I wouldn't want them in a position where they have to cover a lot of ground and tackle and destroy regularly. This might be a kind of a trap game for Houston. By the way, if you take a look at Houston's possession stats, Matt, they've overwhelmingly dominated possession in almost every game they've played. They only had like one game where they lost possession and it was like 52-48. They want to hold the ball and force you to take it off them. That actually, for the first time ever in Rapids history that I can recall, might work in our favor in the sense that Seattle kind of wanted to do that too. And Chris Armas and his guys kind of went, okay, yoink, and they took the ball as much as they could. So I think Houston, normally I would favor them in this match, but without Carrasquillo, who I didn't know wasn't going to play, thank you for that intel, Mr. Pollard, I think they're coming into this game and they have a disadvantage. I'm going to give this game to the Colorado Rapids by a score of 2-0. Matt, what do you think?
I'll say 2-1 in this one because I do think that Houston will be able to do stuff in transition. And I think Griffin Dorsey coming back, I believe this will be his first. He wasn't starting previously for Houston when they came to DSG Mark. So I have to believe that this is going to be his first MLS appearance back in his home state. So I think he's going to absolutely
I've only seen Griffin Dorsey play on field 20 for the Colorado U23s way back in the day when he was fresh, when he was spending the summer vacation making Frosty Creams and playing on the pitch in between his time at Indiana University. So
yeah,
Dorsey is one of the ones that got away. He should be in Burgundy without a doubt. But anyways, hey, what are you gonna do?
Yeah, Brian Crookham, you've got some explaining to do on that.
You got some explaining to do.
And so I juxtapose that, Mark, with the fact that I'm not sure if Griffin Dorsey, he normally plays on the right for Houston. He's been the right back. Coco Kereskia was starting at the left midfielder position in a 4-2-3-1 for Houston in their win over Portland on the weekend. And so with Kereskia unavailable, does Griffin Dorsey move up to a right wing, right midfielder position, or does he stay in the fullback position? Either way, Mark, we have seen the last few opponents against the Rapids have their way on that left flank against Georgie, against Omir, against Sam Vines, in terms of just the ability to get the ball from deep and then move it into the final third in a generally advantageous position. I thought Hidalgo had a really good first half for RSL. And, you know, it's a pretty tough task to go up against the Roldan brothers, you know, who borderline, you know, share the same brain in terms of, you know, them being on the same page as well. So I think Griffin Dorsey will play well. I do like some of Houston's young attackers as well. And I do think they've got the right skill set to take advantage of a mistake happening from the Rapids. That being said, I think that goal will effectively come in garbage time. The Rapids will be up 2-0. Houston will be pushing. They will get a goal, but not be able to complete the comeback. I don't know that there's enough bite in this midfield outside of Artur with Kereskia and with Ace Ace unavailable in this game, Mark. So I wouldn't be shocked or I wouldn't be bothered by Armas rolling out the exact same lineup and just expecting Ollie and Cole to cook in this situation. And I have to believe that the press will be, you know, take another step forward slightly to be good enough against Houston being poor on the ball without Kereskia and without Hector Herrera as well, that they'll be able to do stuff. Or maybe Ben Olsen, you know, goes back to full Benny ball, Mark, thinking that, oh, we've got players missing and everything. We're going at altitude. You know, Nashville was able to get away with a flat 4-4-2 and get a result. Let's come out and be super defensive. Then I have to think that then opens the door again for the Rapids to try and iterate on what they're doing in possession to try and just break down a low block and be able to get a result. And Houston's defense is not what a Gary Smith's Nashville defense is, and the Rapids will be able to break that dam and score at least one goal. So we both got a Rapids win in any case. Mark, with that, let's move on to some Ask HTHLs. We've got two interesting ones that we will cover. First, Mark, we've got one from Brandon Lee, who asks, at Rapids96 Podcast, can we bring up how the transparency of extra time at, and then he adds Lumen Field, which has a Twitter account, at Lumen Field, defeats the whole reason for of extra time. Extra time is based on actions on the field delaying the game, and the scoreboard showing the countdown is just off-putting. I should point out this is a new league-wide change for the season, Brendan. So this is something that every single stadium was doing. We've seen that be inconsistent in the past in MLS, where some teams and some stadiums would have the clock continue to increase after 90-0-0. And we've seen, obviously, at Dick's Sporting Goods Park where that does not happen. Mark, what do we think about this? How much does that change it for you, knowing that there is an official timekeeping of where we are in extra time in stadium, as opposed to just on the referee's watch, somebody doing it off of their phone, and then folks watching at home?
I'm fine with it. I'm the worst person to ask in the world. I don't really understand. I'm not sure I understand the question, to be honest, but I definitely feel like the officiating this game, while a little bit disappointing, because there was a misplay for the Rapids in terms of a foul that I thought should have been called in their favor, I think overall the non-union refs that called this game did an okay job. Matt, did you have any thoughts?
I like it just because I feel like, you know, everybody has it except the people actually in the stadium. You know, I can't recall, I do not recall in the time that I have been watching MLS that we did not get stoppage time from the broadcast, from the stream as well. So we have that. Clearly, there's probably somebody on the bench who's keeping track of that, you know, who starts a stopwatch as soon as we go 90-0. Why is there not something already here? And so this isn't official to where then, you know, there's going to be a buzzer going off for time like we have at hockey games or basketball games when the clock strike 00. The ref is still the arbiter of stoppage time, and he still has it on his watch, and it is still up to his discretion, his or her discretion, of whether or not to add stoppage time to the stoppage time based on stoppages that happen in stoppage time. But I don't see why, if this is something that's available to somebody watching at home, and we clearly have the technology, these are all digital scoreboards, why the box isn't checked or unchecked in order to allow, you know, the actual continuation of that for fans to know how far into stoppage time we have and everything. So I think it's a positive thing. I like that it's happening, and the fact that MLS is implementing this league-wide, where previously it's been inconsistent from stadium to stadium and team to team, I think is absolutely a net positive for it. And then last Ask HTHL that we have, Mark, comes from good friend of the show, Eric Stinson, who asks, why does it take the Rapids 20 minutes each game to get a sense of urgency? Mark, this is something that we have talked about, where for a coaching staff and a team that has preached urgency and intensity, it seems to take them a while to get into games. And there's even been second halves where the first half didn't go well, where they played evenly. It's taken them time to get into the second half. And so I have to wonder, is that maybe something that the opponent's doing to where they're trying to they're anticipating the Rapids to play really intense, so they come out with way more intensity, just like how we're going to see Azteca do against R2 tomorrow? Or is there maybe something else that's going on? Or how much of this feeds into the issue that we have noticed where the team is not on the same page from a pressing standpoint? So maybe the intensity is there, but it's not obvious because they're not doing it together. So then it just looks like they're disjointed. So then they're intense, but they're intense in the ways that a chicken with its head cut off is intense, Mark, that is not necessarily the same as, you know, a New York Red Bulls 21-year-old coming at you, getting his debut, coming out of the academy, like Omer Fernandez was doing for Chris Armas back in 2019-2020. Mark, what do you think's wrong with the way that the Rapids start halves compared to growing into the game, where we do see an intense, pressing, high-energy team playing with urgency?
I thought they came out with urgency in this last match. I think the other games that you're right that they didn't come out with urgency. I mean, nobody would ever argue they came out with urgency against Portland where they got totally schwacked, but they came out with urgency in the game against Seattle. They were the better team on the front foot. So I don't know. I think it's a work in progress. I think one of the other aspects of quote unquote coming out with urgency has to do with being in possession versus counter-pressing, you know, forcing to take the ball off the opponent. One of the challenges of counter-pressing is that if you come out and show your hand early, if you show that you're going to press and how you're going to press and what your triggers are early on, then the opponent knows how you're going to do it the rest of the game. So I think that's a really interesting kind of way of like being like a little bit conservative with how you show off the game. So I don't know. That's my take, is that the quote unquote lack of urgency that we're seeing is tactical. Back to your thing that you said way before about limited sample size with regards to the Seattle game and the first four games of the season. I'm not sure we know what's going on yet. The last thing I'll say is this. I think our lack of finishing makes our urgency look less urgent, in the sense that we would look more urgent if Rafael Navajo scored early in games or on his first chance, and same with Cole Bassett, and same with Darren Yappe, and same with Omir Fernandez, and same with Kevin Cabral, and same with Georgi Mihailovic. You know, if our players were bloodthirsty in front of goal on their first effort, or had a much higher percentage finishing chance on their expected goals, we would say that they were showing urgency. But you never look urgent when you don't score early. And so getting into the box and shooting a little bit early on doesn't feel, if you don't convert, doesn't look urgent. But that being said, this team, you're right. I mean, Eric is totally right. There's no argument on this, that like the Rapids' first 15 minutes doesn't look as put together. It looks like they're always trying to grow into a game here. Let's see where this is mid-season, and let's see if this is a notable trend or whether this is just a little bit of shaking off the off-season rust.
Listeners, you can follow us collectively on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, and at Rapids96podcast. You can get at us with your questions, just like Eric and Brendan did, with the hashtag AskHTHL. You can also follow us. We are on Facebook now, as Rabbi mentioned. Check out our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. That is where you can pay to support us and also get the merch. And if you are someone who is already paid, look out for that email that you would have gotten previously in your inbox to fill out the online form so that we know your size and a good mailing address so that we can get this drip to you via the U.S. Postal Service. Email us at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Tell your other Rapids and soccer curious friends about us as well. Thank you very much for listening to Holding the High Line. Enjoy the game on Saturday. I will be at the tailgate. I will have HTHL stickers with me. So if you want to come up, talk to me, share a hot dog, share a beer, get any merch or anything like that, I would be happy to interact with you absolute savage legends. And we'll see you next week after, hopefully, 3 points against the Dynamo.
Peace.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.